Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday. Bah, 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 bah. I threw that in myself. That is not a sound effect. John Browner, Jason Lawhead, right here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. And we are back after another, I feel like I keep saying another, crazy week of NFL football. There's some other things. NBA Media Day. The Padres look like they're going to make the postseason for the first time in a long time in an actual 162 regular game season. So we've got a lot in this stew we got to get to. But until before we do that, my dog, Jason Lawhead, we got to talk about the way that you supposed to write on Instagram that you don't confuse everybody who follows you to think that you got some business going on. We'll get to that at some point.
Funny.
We'll get to your improper use of Instagram at the end of the show. But before we get to that, what's up, brother?
What up, man? How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. I can't complain.
Yeah, man. I had a good weekend myself. Wife and I did a little friend's wedding on Saturday night. But earlier that day, I went down and checked out the Aztecs for the first time, courtesy of our man, Bill Hagen. Thanks, Bill, for the great tickets, and got a little flavor, a little taste of Ohio. Toledo came to town, so it was nice to see the stadium on a tolerable day weather-wise. You know, it's warm out that way, but it wasn't like it was the last few weeks. But great little stadium, man. They did a great job with everything, in my opinion. I know some people can complain about, you know, it's wide open in the sun. You don't get a lot of shade. But, hey, football's outside. You live in San Diego. They opened it up. You got nice breezeways that come through that hit you on some nice, you know, nice little winds that the stadium doesn't block. And, it was fun. So a couple of takeaways was a great place to see a football game. Would like to see maybe – just a better Aztecs football team, but they won the game the way the Aztecs have always won football games. So applaud them for winning the way they've won in the past, and they've won to build this program the way it has been. And that's just running the ball, and getting big plays and stops on defense when they had to.
Look, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm setting up a bit for later in the show. I'm 100% you glad you enjoyed yourself, brother. Yeah. I really am. But I got to ask a question about the few people who were in attendance in this game. I tell you, you got to be careful with the media. Do you know how many people, quote unquote, ESPN put in the game cast or the game review that were in attendance at San Diego State?
No, I mean, I didn't look at the attendance. You could tell that a lot of seats were empty. That's for sure. Final number.
Let's have some fun. It seats 35,000. Mm-hmm. How many people would you say were there with your own eyes?
Well, I'll say this, Browner. And I made a joke with one of the guys I was with. I made a joke because when we went to get a beer and then we came back where Bill's seats are in the 105.7 section, off the top of my head. But, you know, there is a slight overhang in the concourse area behind the last row of the lower section that the upper deck offers. And it's just basically, but it's funny because they were three or four deep in the shade, like there were no seats available. You know how like when you're three or four deep behind the rail because there's nowhere else to sit because things are packed.
Right.
That's what it's like because people are trying to stay in the shade. So I was trying to figure like, yes, there are, you know, not a lot of people in the seats. The student section I thought showed out pretty well.
Student section has been doing great at those.
Yeah, they were having fun, even though they're walking the stadium at times you see it, but they're in there, they're having fun, they're playing with the band, they're in their seats for the most part. But yeah, man, if I had to guess just by looking at it, I would have said they'd be lucky if 20 came through the turnstiles. But I also was like, well, maybe a lot of them are just out in the concourses and in the shade.
ESPN officially put this on their website. 27,108 people attended this game. History will tell you that 27,000 people were at that game. That's a lot.
I don't know about that. Yeah. That, I mean, even with what I, even if I could rationalize what was underneath the overhangs out at the concourses, maybe in the Saquon thing or whatever, I'd still be like, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe there was a lot of people that have paid for tickets that just aren't going to go in that kind of a day. I don't know.
Stop it. Listen, I love that stadium. It
is fantastic. It's a great stadium.
It is a very, it is perfect. I would, you know what? I'm gonna say that stadium is perfect for San Diego State. That stadium is perfect for San Diego and what you can do with it. It is perfect.
Absolutely.
Don't tell me that there were 27,000 people there because I have eyes, one and two. San Diego State's larger problem is the product on the field. That is not watchable football. I'm sorry. This is not hurt. You don't have Herschel Walker in your backfield. You don't have Emmitt Smith. You don't have Barry Sanders, Walter Payton. You don't have these guys in your backfield. So you're – this is – sports is entertainment. Before it is anything, before it's entertainment. What we saw, what you saw, Jason, mm-hmm. from the stands live, did you find that brand of football to be entertaining?
You know, I like football. I like, you know, I like.
I didn't ask you that. I didn't ask you that. We all like football. You're here. I'm here because we like football.
Yeah, I would. I was going thinking like the way Toledo was able to get some chunks, even though they got totally killed by Ohio State. There was times where they would get some chunks of yardage. They looked like they had a more exciting offense on the television set. I was hoping maybe that would translate. But no, it was not. It was like watching a really, 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 really good high school football
game. Yes. And therein lies the problem. Yeah. I don't think that Rocky Long. I don't think that Brady Hoke is not a good coach. That's I don't want that to get mixed up in any of this. That brand of football is not watchable. And if you crest in this new stadium with that brand of football, less and less people will go. Now, the novelty of having this building, people use the women's soccer game as their first crack at going in the doors. Not San Diego State football. Not San Diego State versus the University of Arizona. That building got sold out in a real sellout that was about 30,000 because I was there. I saw what it could do. I saw what it looked like up close with 30,000 people. It was absolutely gorgeous.
And I will say this because let me just keep your thought, but I will say this now that you say that number and you refute that number, it's starting to really, because the couple of times we've talked, whether it's been Alex about the soccer game or, you know, Scott going down, you going down, like everybody talked about traffic and getting in being a nightmare. Well, mm-hmm. I will say, I mean, I didn't roll up through until about 10 after. I was getting off on Friars Road at about 10 after 12 p.m. And okay. I was showing my tick. I was parked, walked up, and showing my ticket as they were for the kickoff. Like, so I was going through the scanner as the ball was in the air. So from the time I got off Friars Road, got through, got to where I was supposed to park, walked all the way up the ramps, got through the thing. It was only 20 minutes, which, like, if it is supposedly a nightmare, that I would have missed kickoff and then some.
So there you go. That crowd you saw was probably 8,000 to 10,000. And I'm being nice.
Maybe
that
12.
Probably 8,000 to 10,000 people there.
I mean, there were so many empty seats.
This team needs to find a way to retain their head coach, but let someone else have full autonomy over the offense. Because the idea that you're going to be a defensive team, and so therefore you need to run the ball and protect the ball because you don't want to make mistakes on offense and put your defense in a negative position. The game of football, of entertaining football, is passing the ball, yards, okay? You can run the ball, have it be – when Donnell Pumphrey was the running back, when Rashard Penny was the running back, those are special guys. Mm-hmm. So those guys running the ball, one had Heisman votes. The kid had Heisman votes. Rashard Penny came mm-hmm. after him. 2,000-yard rushers. Now that's history. I will pile into that stadium to see that. I don't want to call it trash because the kids are playing hard, but that brand of football is not going to get people in that building. And I want that building to succeed because I want that university from a football perspective to succeed because I need them to get in the Pac-12, because then you will really start seeing what that stadium can do. So I'm glad you went. I'm glad you had a good time. But after, I think, three games, I can't watch it.
Yeah.
It was on my TV. And I can't watch it.
And maybe a new stadium is it's time for a new time, you know. And I like, you know, as far as like knowing what I know about Brady Hoke and seeing the job that he was able to do, coming in and keeping San Diego State football still, you know, on its track from what it did. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, this kind of a stadium, maybe you need to just say, look, for better or worse, you know, it's like, you know, you can, it's almost like, you know, you can go 10-2 or 11-2 doing this in this box, right? Yeah. You have that. But if we open this box, maybe it's a Chip Kelly type of system guy, and maybe he's going to start off a little bit of 5-6 and 6-5 and maybe 7-4. But guess what? You're going to have a spread out offense. You're going to be rolling. You're going to be scoring points. You're going to be starting to get recruits looking your way that go, I want to play that style of football. And maybe it's a lot of fun to go to San Diego because they're scoring 38 points, even in a loss. And that's maybe something that, you know, you have to, as a community, an athletic community, a university has to sit down at a table and go, look, you know, 10-2, 11-2 in Qualcomm all day long and win conference championships and go to a good bowl for us, or at least be eligible for something, you know, that we can stick our chest out about. But there's also times where maybe you, when you build a new stadium and it takes a couple of years, right? You had to go to Long Beach or wherever it was for a couple of years. Maybe you got to just kind of take that attitude with going forward,
the football team,
with you know, bringing a style of football to the stadium to complement it. And you're right. I mean, that's a serious possible roundtable discussion that has to be talked about at going forward.
When we started the year this year, I think we said that there. I'm not gonna say we. Everyone said that the AFC West was the best division in the history of football. As we quietly revisit that now, the Raiders are 0-3. The Broncos are 2-1, but it's the grossest 2-1 you may ever see in a football
it
team.
It really is.
The Chiefs are 2-1 with an unbelievable loss against the Colts. And the Chargers are 1-2, but their 1-2 is respectable because I think I'm hurt watching them. So after all the preseason fanfare about what we saw or what we were going to see from this division, are you worried or not worried about which team, and tell me why?
Well, the Raiders are in trouble, I think. You know, Denver, you know, Russ has had seasons that he's won like this on teams like this in Seattle. So I would, you know, Denver, you know, could be one of these teams that is a disgusting 11-6, because he's had times where Seattle, there's just been a couple of those teams that were just bad, but good enough, just how the things fell, that they were able to either win the division or climb into a wild card spot. And you looked at them, you're like, well, gosh, they were, five of them were come from behind victories, and boy, they gave up there. They lost to these teams on the schedule. But when you wait out, so, the jury's out still for Denver. Oakland. Like I said last week, if they lose this game, they may have to move back to Oakland, which now they did. They're in trouble, I think, because I think there's a lot of people looking at each other in the room. And you made fun of me last year. I said, now you just stick with Passaccia for one more year at least, or at least let him start the year. Now, we had a big disagreement about this at the end of the year. And I said, the Raiders have done nothing but put themselves into this same situation that they're in with McDaniel right now, because they're always going for the sexy hire. They're always like, oh, what can we get over there? And it literally just bit them in the rear end with John Gruden again. And then they finally get a Rick Bisaccia who, hey, look, say what you want, but the team that played the Bengals the best in the AFC playoffs last year
were the Raiders, and they won the game. They won going out. They looked confident going out. Derek Carr looked confident, and he looked as much as a leader, because maybe the team knew Bisaccia is interim stuff. But sometimes, you know, sometimes that just might be the thing that works. And maybe running to a McDaniels, who didn't really, you know, yeah, he won a playoff game in Denver, but that thing went sideways quick, and he ran back to Belichick, and the Belichick assistant tree is that never been what it's cracked.
It's
up
rotten,
to be.
Baby. And, that thing is rotten.
And they go running for the next great thing when things are starting to correct a little bit, right? Like, Bisaccia had him playing better than Gruden had him when Gruden had him playing the best he had him playing. And
but
so,
you know, but you know, in professional sports, you can get teams to rally around a cause for a season.
Right. But is McDaniel then? But my point is this. My point wasn't that Bisaccia needed to be on a contract, a future contract. My point is running to McDaniel. Is McDaniel? Why McDaniel? Why did they have to run straight to him and not really kind of take a beat and a breath and go, we can always start the season with Bisaccia. The guys know him. They like him. And maybe we can have an agreement with Rich to say, hey, look, you know, if you don't win by this at this point, you think, you know, hey, but you'd be worse off 0-3 Bisaccia, and then you're looking for possibly another interim coach, or maybe saying, hey, we're going to make this guy the coach the rest of the year, a young guy, you know, play caller, whatever it is. But I don't know. I just feel like now they're in a situation again where probably the team is in disbelief. They're looking at this young guy, McDaniel, going, what's going on? You know, whatever you can say about Bisaccia, he had an older kind of tenure to him. He had a long time in this league. He knew, you know, a lot of different, you know, people, and he knew how to massage people, knew how to treat people, knew how to act in locker room.
Yeah, you can't talk about massaging people.
But, you know, saying, so that's where they're at. But I would say that, obviously, you called it, the Colts over the Chiefs. I thought even if the Chiefs played bad, which, you know, I'll accept that the Chiefs can go in there and play bad, I still thought that they'd win that game. Chargers got some injuries.
Let me tell you what I'm worried about.
The top two teams, I still like the Chargers and Chiefs, and I'll write Denver off when it's time to write them off.
I am more worried about Denver than I am Las Vegas, and I know that sounds insane. I will tell you why. There are three offenses, and two of those offenses have Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and they are struggling. The Green Bay Packers. The Denver Broncos, and then the Chicago Bears.
And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Hold on, no. I'm putting this together in a way. Those three teams, the Chicago Bears have the, calling their plays, they have the Green Bay Packers quarterbacks coach, Luke Getsy. He's now their play caller. They're running the Green Bay Packer offense in Chicago.
I see where you're going with this.
Nathaniel Hackett.
Yes.
Was the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. That offense looks utterly terrible with a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Russell Wilson. And the Green Bay Packers have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And their offense, 2 out of the 3 weeks, have been dormant. So what I say to this is, I believe what you are seeing with the Denver Broncos is fool's gold. No pun intended, because they beat the 49ers. But the 49ers... you're watching fool's gold. A 10 to 11 football game in 2022 should not only not happen, it should be pulled off the television midway through the third quarter. That game last night was grotesque. And you look up, and in the fourth quarter, to win the game, you needed Russell Wilson to go deep, deep back into his bag and go scramble, Russ, just to get you points on the board, just kind of save the game for you. Nathaniel Hackett's offense, he doesn't know how to run it, which would be a disaster, or he's not good at the job. I don't give head coaches 3 weeks to be ready. You are a person who's been playing football or in the coaching realm your entire adult life. If you're going to be the head coach and they hired you to be the head coach, you should be ready. They hired Sean McVay, the youngest coach in the history of football. He was ready. So they hired Kevin O'Connell for the Minnesota Vikings. He looks to be ready. He looks ready for the job. Mike McDaniel hired, ready for the job. So somehow Nathaniel Hackett gets leeway because he's a first-time head coach, first-time play caller. That ain't my problem, bro. That ain't my problem. And people with this 2-1 record, look at the two wins. And if you want to hang your hat on those and tell me that the Broncos are for real, good luck. Good luck.
Well, I think they definitely have deficiencies, especially on offense. And yes, he looks kind of definitely flustered by the big moments and big decisions in games. And when there's crucial periods of the game, the team, especially offensively, looks to, you know, look confused and at times, you know, not crisp and drilled in the kind of plays they're trying to call them to move these chains. A lot of times they look like, you know, this could be the first time they ran that play.
This ain't the first time we've done this, so y'all know we have reached that point in time. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Brown and Lawhead, Mitre 1090 ESPN, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Browner and Lawhead, second half of the podcast. Welcome to Monday. John Browner, Jason Lawhead bringing you in here. Y'all know how we get down here on the Mitre 1090 ESPN with Browner and Lawhead. We tell y'all what the funny is, what the conversation is by the time you get to us at from 6 to 7 p.m. Monday through Wednesday. We were having a very interesting conversation about who you're worried about, who you're not worried about. And Jason, during the break, really had some things to share with me about something that he thought I politely skipped over because he thought I was trying to get out of it. So what was it, Jason? What you had a question?
About the coaches?
Yeah.
Or... Well, I was just, you were talking about who's not made for the moment. And I know it was coming from a certain, you know, kind of ecosystem that you were bringing up, but I'm asking is Staley made for the moment?
You know,
because I know you, there's injuries and whatnot, but I mean that your football team can't get just cooked like that at home. I don't care who's out and who's in against a Jaguar team. You just can't let them. I mean, I tweeted, finally, you know, SoFi has more Chargers fans in it for the first time, and the team doesn't decide to show up.
I want to start with that last point because I just gave San Diego State the business for not putting seats in the stands. I don't know what more of an indictment you need on – I mean, the book's already closed for a bunch of people here locally, but a good laugh of why it's clear that the wrong move was made to put that team in Los Angeles by the NFL and by its owner is that they were selling $10 tickets for that game in week 3 in Los Angeles. Okay? Let me repeat that.
Yeah.
There were $10 tickets to get into that building. The ticket was 10 times less than the parking cost would have done you to get into that building. It costs $100 to park there.
Barnum and Bailey, Ringling Brothers, could put more people in SoFi than the Chargers could right now.
So, I am of the belief that you don't give coaches time. I thought Staley made a good. He flamed out at the end of the year. I liked his style. He has altered his style of not going for it on fourth down as much as he did last year with a better defense this year, so it doesn't really make any sense. But I will tell you, I'm not against it.
His defense is getting shredded. He's a defensive guy. It's kind of like in Denver, Hackett. You're an offensive guy. Hackett's defense looks great. That's why I feel like Denver might have some punch in them for the longer haul if that defense keeps playing the way they've played and let, you know, maybe Russ isn't cooking much, but if he throws a game or two in the microwave for him, they'll be okay. But this defense, I mean, and then, like you said, the offense looks flat at times, and I don't know. In some of his decision-making, rolling Herbert back out there, oh, he said he wanted to play. Well, sometimes you got to be like, yeah, well, this game ain't worth playing anymore, Captain. So sit down, and let's get ready and start reading the notebook and looking at film for next week.
See, I don't – now, that part, I don't fly along with that because – there are certain things as a young quarterback and as a young head coach that you need to make sure is on even keel. The relationship between the quarterback and the head coach has to be 100% if the coach is going to be successful. If Justin Herbert tells me he wants to play, we've gone through this medically, had him cleared. Yeah. Obviously, they put a little something in him to make it not hurt as much, but he's been medically cleared. He's gone through practice. He says he can do it. We let the game play out. looks normal. He looks like an injured guy, which, again, you want to give your team the best chance to win on every Sunday because there's so few of them. You cannot put Chase Daniels out there if Justin Herbert can play. You just can't do that. And so for all the people who have such criticism and flames and say, not just you, Jason, but people who are saying that he's on a hot seat now, I don't agree to that. I 100% don't agree to that. You put Justin Herbert.
I'm not saying he should.
There are people. Ahead. Okay, not you. There are
right, I'm not saying he should be on the hot seat. I'm saying I'm throwing him into that question of, is he ready? I mean, what do you think? Like, so because, you know, 38-10 is a pretty sound beating.
38-10 from a team that just shut out the Indianapolis Colts last week for 0 points. You. And that same team just beat the Chiefs the following week. So
and should have won week one.
Right. So this isn't a pushover team. They've shown through 3 weeks with a new head coach how different it looks if your coach didn't have his hands up someone's booty in Ohio. So Doug Peterson has been a revelation for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I'm taking them out of, we should beat this team. And I think a lot of people should take them out of the we should beat this team bucket. There's still some teams in that. Chicago's in that bucket. The Jets are in that bucket. The Seahawks are in that bucket. That bucket still got a lot of teams in it, but I think you should remove the Jaguars out of it. But I don't necessarily see yesterday's loss as something that is a referendum on whether or not Staley has the chops to tell Justin Herbert, no, you're done here. Right. I think when you take that field, there's other guys on that roster who should be able to step up in the event someone goes down, and that didn't happen. And so I want my quarterback out there because he gives confidence to the rest of the team. Putting Chase Daniel out there, you know you lost to start the game. And so the game obviously
– No, I'm talking about the last two possessions of the game. When you win, it's 30 – and you sit there and you go, I'm talking about running him out there and continuing to possibly get him hurt. And instead of saying, look, man, look, we could get you hurt even if you were 100, feeling 100% healthy. And in a game like this, ain't no reason. We're going to go put Chase out there to hand the ball off as much as we can until this thing – time runs out. And I'm not saying he should or he shouldn't have. I'm not saying that should put him on the hot seat. I'm just saying at some points you got to sit there and kind of his answers to those questions seem like he's thinking and searching for him. He doesn't seem real defined at the press conference table. And I'm not saying he should be on the hot seat. What I will say this, though, is that seat, that temperature of that seat next week is going to be either – cold, lukewarm, or very hot, because if they don't beat the Houston Texans next week, I don't care who you don't have. I don't care who might be sore. I don't care who, you know, they lost Guyton today. The report came out. Wide receiver went down. It was all, yes, there's people and personnel, but you have to go into Houston 0-2-1, who's 0-2-1 next week. Mm-hmm. And you've got to look like a Charger team that has been the team that fans, media, the team itself expects to look like on its typical Sunday, which is win, lose, or draw, being a team that gets out there and executes in areas and gets their defense to make big plays and sack the quarterback. Because if they limp to a, oh gosh, you know, type of win, or if they lose that game, that temperature is cranked.
See, I don't think an ugly win is any different than a pretty win in their case, because there are good people who see them as a good team, and so a win is a win with them.
Right, that'll be the lukewarm seat I mentioned. So the lukewarm seat is, right? Is there still 2-2?
Right.
If they lose, that temperature's cranked up. And if they win and they look good and Herbert goes through the paces and, you know, gets his 325 and three touchdowns and a defense, then that seat cools off considerably because they're 2-2 and things are okay in the AFC West for them.
I think that this game showed me what sometimes you can learn in a win and a loss that you couldn't have learned in a win. I think that Justin Herbert finishing that game shows me the type of character that we're dealing with. Because if you're up 40, if you're up the way that they were down and you want to take him out, I completely understand that. He's come in, he's taking care of his business. Now let's get him out of here.
Let the other guy get reps.
Right.
Sure.
But if you are down with him out there, he's got to stay out there. And if I'm the coach, you got to stay out there, because this shows everybody else on this roster, if our best player has to go out here and finish this game, you better go out here and finish this game. And I think that goes further than people trying to him and haw over him going in for the last two possessions when they clearly were no chance of them coming back. So I just don't find any fault in that. I think that shows character by the young man, and I think that shows a cohesion between him and his coach, trust developing between him and his coach that, hey, man, trust to know that I know what my body and I want to be out there. Let me be out there. And Staley letting him stay out there. So I thought it was a good thing. I didn't think it was a bad thing at all.
Yeah. And there's definitely, you know, obviously there's foundation to that argument. There's no doubt. And I get that. And, you are the leader. You lead by example, the rest of the team. And then the coach breathes a sigh of relief. Because let's be honest, you're right. If the score is the other way, then you bring Chase Daniels out there and you're getting him positive reps. He's out there with a lead and he feels good that he might get to throw the football and try to be creative. But when you put a guy out there in that situation, when you're saying we don't want to get him hurt, so maybe you go get hurt down 28. That's not, those aren't positive reps. The teams aren't looking at Chase. The team isn't looking at Chase as somebody that like gets to kind of, you know, showcase anything or try to be part of a win. It just is, it's one of those things. Like, it's like the mob. It's like, go start the car before I get in it. Right. You know? Right. So no, and there is foundation to that argument. I just felt like, you know, at the table, he's not really communicating it well. I don't know if he's, you know, so I'm just throwing it out there as possible.
That's humor in itself that you go, you know, all right, hey, listen, you go out there and you take these hits because you're worth less. You're worth less.
Right.
You're not worthless. Exactly. You're just worth less. So go out there and you get beat up. Well, this is why we let this guy watch. You get beat up.
Right.
So I think all in all, the Chargers learned something about themselves or about their quarterback in general yesterday then I think they wouldn't have learned in a win. So
that's a good point. So next week they've got to use, you know, next week they've got to have the kind of performance that puts faith back in them.
Yes.
Right. 100%. So that's the goal next week. 0-2-1 Texans. You go back out there and like you said, even if it's an ugly win, you do the things that get the win, and you at least put that faith back into yourself. And then you can say, look, we learned a lot more from that 38-10 loss to a team that's, you know, streaking. And you know, I'm happy for Trevor Lawrence, man, because, you know, he got himself
he was
a good
in trouble.
Coach. Yeah, I mean, he got himself a good coach that understands quarterbacks and put him right back on the right track, because you're right. I mean, he was ready to go down in a system just like implosion of just being on the wrong football franchise. And
put it like
that,
this,
you know. If what a redemption for that whole franchise to get this Peterson guy.
If the Jaguars, look what it took for them to fire Urban Meyer. Look how many negative instances it took for them to fire Urban Meyer. If Urban Meyer doesn't screw up in a way that I've never seen a head coach screw up repeatedly, he's still the coach. And instead of them being 2-1, they're probably 0-3. Because it just wasn't working. And so I feel great for Trevor Lawrence that they were able to get Doug Peterson just like you do, because the kid's got some legit talent, and I really think that he's going to really lead the Jaguars to positive things behind Doug Peterson. Another thing I want to talk about real quick before we do Jason's don't ever find yourself in this position on social media. The Padres are 7-3 in their last 10. They're three games ahead of Milwaukee for the wild card, and they're a game. I think let me make sure I'm 100% correct on this. And they are a game and a half plus up on Philadelphia. I don't know why they just don't put the regular numbers, but I think that we are getting to a point where the Padres can start looking to what they're going to do about their postseason. And if you are a Padres fan, a lot of y'all have been Padres fans way longer than me. I'm new to this, but I will tell you, since 2010, 2012, one of those two, since the last time they were in the playoffs after a full regular season, when this team, because we're getting to the win and not if, when this team makes it official and they are a playoff team, this might be one of the biggest sighs of relief you have seen. And that sigh of relief may lead them on a run in the playoffs, because this team, since the All-Star break, has been through so much turmoil and so much drama and so many guys underperforming I think the getting into the playoffs will literally give everyone the fresh start that this team needs. And I think they're going, it's going to be hell to pay when this team looks up and sees their opponent. Because it's going to be 0-0 with Clevenger playing well. He didn't go too long yesterday, but with Blake Snell on fire, with obviously pay that man Joe Musgrove. Hopefully he can find his groove again. And Yu Darvish, who has been ace level lights out. So you've got the starters. You now have the closer because Hader has found the magic again.
Mm-hmm.
You have the bats that have woken up and being Soto and being Bell and Drury. Will Myers homered again yesterday. Manny Machado's had an MVP level year. So now you're looking at this team with an MVP candidate on it, with a legendary, with a futuristic level talent on it in Juan Soto when it comes to being at the plate. And this team's dangerous, man. This team is dangerous.
They are dangerous. I'd like to see them play St. Louis instead in round one, then Atlanta somehow. But they are dangerous because what's it, a three-game series, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first, so it's three games mm-hmm. for that first while the two teams, while Dodgers and Mets presumably will have the bye. Now, by the standings, the Atlanta could still win that division. I mean, right. They're only a game and a half out. So it could be, you know, it's funny because that little bit of a movement there between Philly, San Diego, Atlanta, and the Mets could change the first round matchups all kinds of different ways in the next, you know, nine ball games that are left somehow. I mean, if the Mets win that series and somehow the Phillies take over the Padres, then it's the Padres going to the Cardinals and whatever. But this Padre team, like you said, and we've said, and give Melvin Bob Melvin deserves so much credit for the way he handled, and I'm going to say it again, massaged Hader in the sense that, he knew I think Bob knew the whole, even when it looked like Hader couldn't get anybody out, never was gonna, he knew that if the only way we were going to be successful come postseason, if he is the guy that is right for the closer role. So let me just, try to do this and try to do that for this little 2 to 3 week stretch and plug him in, get Nick Martinez, give him some confidence being able to close games because we might need him to just close games the way weird pitching and extra inning things go in baseball and whatnot. So I think Melvin really did all of those years he's been a manager, all the experience he's had really paid off big time with Hader more than anything he's touched on this team this year, which is a really big key, I think, because he's got his confidence back. They're 2 weeks away from postseason play. He's back to that guy that he knows he is, which is a closer, not a guy trying to figure out what to do in the seventh inning or two batters in the eighth or whatnot. So Melvin, a huge managerial kind of move there, I thought, and that was another thing that I think put the Padres in kind of that outside lane to take a lead and hold on to a lead because other guys in the clubhouse believed, our MVP's at third, our closer's our closer. We got our ace and a couple of good arms right behind him. And Soto can bust out at any moment. And if he busts out in October and Soto's got a 500 on base percentage and hits 350, wow, watch out.
So, yeah, man, I think that this team, once it's official, will breathe a massive sigh of relief because there has been a lot of pressure on them once they became – listen, this team was in the limelight of baseball to start the season because they were ranked as one of the top mm-hmm. three teams in baseball. They had Fernando Tatis Jr. on it, and there was a lot of talk about him. And then it happened again at the trade deadline. They became the most talked-about team in baseball with the Soto trade. And so there's been a lot of eyes on this team like never before. And they have come through like never before up until this point. So,
and the Fernando Tatis news again, the other news, he was always supposed to be returning and going into ready to take some at bats. And then the minute he was, boom. So yeah, absolutely. And a Dodger team, right? The big brother that beating them up their whole lives, winning 100-some games up the highway that they can't be. So this team has battled and battled through all of its identity crises and where they have to get. And it's fun to watch. I'm glad to be living in a city. I know my Guardians.
You've got some explaining to do. Apparently you don't know how to use social media.
I'm sorry.
So Jason celebrated his, it's very important that you guys hear the story, the way this explained. Jason celebrated his third, 1, 2, 3, his third anniversary with his wife. He then posted this on the internets. Okay, if you're watching, you can see the picture.
On the internets.
Jason and his lovely wife at their anniversary dinner on the internets. This was posted, okay? Now, Jason, can you please read what that says for me?
Exquisite meal for three, and with an exclamation point.
If you go to Kaplan and Crew page and you go to Brown and Lawhead and you see this image of exquisite meal for three, there are only two people sitting at the table. So what would that imply to anyone reading this caption about Jason's wife? She's pregnant.
Right. She's pregnant with a baby that's about to have fetal alcohol syndrome because she's drinking wine. I didn't think it that way.
Which then led to Jason posting this lovely explanation.
The next day,
because I'm an idiot guy, my last post said exquisite meal for three. And I woke to people congratulating me for being pregnant. I meant years we're married, but I guess now I see my mistake. Thanks anyway. Bruh, you got 20 seconds. What the hell were you thinking?
I was thinking, you know how like, you know, the announcer like, well, head for three. I was kind of like typing in that voice, like exquisite meal for three, thinking I've already like told people this is our third year anniversary. Didn't think of it. Maybe a couple people texted me then before I went to bed, but then the DMs on that, and I woke up to like 40 of them. And let me tell you something. If that's how I told everybody I was pregnant, my mom would have sent me anthrax in the mail if I would have did it that way, because I wouldn't have told her that way. So my wife was drinking. We're not pregnant. And I'm just hoping for year four. I don't know what I'm going to say, you know.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Listen.
Drinking for four. And then there are people like, she's having twins.
We'll teach this man how to use social media. Until then, Brown and Lawhead, we'll see y'all tomorrow. Peace.
Tomorrow, peace.